Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Nurse grabs you by the hand, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question, but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had a negative D-dimer.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is April 29th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is, I Hope You Have a Negative D-Dimer, a Just PE Study. And our guest skeptic today is Dr. Kirsten DeWitt. Kirsten did an internal medicine and emergency medicine training in the UK. Since then, she's worked in thrombosis research and received a doctorate in the UK and a master's in epidemiology from the University of Ottawa. Kirsten currently works as a thrombosis physician and emergency physician at McMaster University. Welcome to the SGEM, Kirsten.
Hello, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, that introduction, you sound like a real thrombosis expert, a thrombologist, a clot savant, if you will. So why so interested in this field of emergency medicine, Kirsten?
Truthfully, I fell into thrombosis research. In 2001, I was looking to get some experience in research in emergency medicine. And at the time, I was presented with a choice of projects. So I could either study some tests for ruling out pulmonary embolism in the emergency department, or I could do a study looking at ACS. I chose pulmonary embolism. During the conduct of that study, I became fascinated by thrombosis. And really, that's where my heart's taken me since.
So your heart has taken you to clots in the lung. Well, we are thrilled to have someone with your knowledge and expertise to help review one of the biggest emergency papers of 2014. Are you feeling skeptical and ready to go?
Definitely.
Well, listeners may be wondering, where is that 80s theme music they've got used to? Well, I had a hard time, believe it or not, finding something that would go with the topic today. However, I did have an idea for a music video to explain the Wells criteria, Bayesian thinking, and D-dimer testing. Because, let's be honest, every time we order that D-dimer, we're hoping it comes back negative. So the intro for this week's episode of The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine were a few verses from the song Good Riddance by Green Day, SGEM style, performed by my son, Ethan. Kirsten, we like to start these podcasts off with a case. Could you give us a case scenario to frame what we're going to be talking about today?
Yes. So my case is an 84-year-old lady who's presented to the emergency department with vague symptoms of breathlessness. And she also tells you that she has some mild chest discomfort that's been there for the past 2 days. She doesn't say it's pain, rather she uses the word ache, and that ache is worse when she takes a breath in. Her past medical history includes hypertension, dyslipidemia, diabetes, and osteoarthritis. Her vital signs are normal, and you've done the PERC score, but of course her PERC score is positive because she's 84 years old. Her Wells score is low, however. You're thinking about ordering a D-dimer, but you're worried because you wonder if you take that D-dimer blood test, what are the chances that it's going to fall into the normal range, given that she's 84 years old?
So for some background information, a negative D-dimer has been shown to safely rule out pulmonary embolism in patients who are not high risk. It has a high sensitivity, but unfortunately a low specificity. And this means that there is a high false positive rate when ordering D-dimers.
Yes, that's right. And the false positive rate will increase with age. And that's because normal D-dimer levels in the blood will increase as somebody gets older. And in fact, this is problematic because the chances of having pulmonary embolism also increase as you get older. The result is that when we check a D-dimer on somebody who's over the age of 70 or 80, it's much less likely that they will have a low D-dimer level and much more likely that their normal baseline levels are higher than the usual cutoff that we use.
Well, there's a worldwide epidemic of overtesting with downstream consequences of overdiagnosis and overtreatment. The problem of overtesting is complex. It stems from this imperfect mix of incomplete and flawed diagnostic evidence, constant malpractice threats in some jurisdictions, yes, the US of A, and clinicians struggling to balance clinical care, our day job, with maintaining awareness of that ever-evolving research landscape.
Yeah, and pulmonary embolism is a prime target to reduce overtesting in the emergency department. And there have been a number of studies looking in particular at D-dimer to see if there's a way to adjust the cutoff according to patient age. So the first study was done in 2010, and that was a retrospective derivation study looking at varying the cutoff for patients who are age 50 years of age or older.
Yeah, Kirsten, they came up with this really simple formula, a formula that even I could calculate in my head. You took the patient's age and times it by 10. So in the case you presented, it would be 84 times 10. 840. And that study you referred to was by Duma et al. In 2010, and they concluded, quote, "The age-adjusted D-dimer cutoff point combined with clinical probability greatly increases the proportion of older patients in whom pulmonary embolism could be safely excluded."
And of course, there have been several studies published since then, all of which were retrospective in nature. And those studies analyzed how this variable D-dimer cutoff level would have performed in other groups of patients, all in retrospective data. So we have maybe 7 or 8 different retrospective studies which have looked to see the safety of using the variable D-dimer cutoff according to age.
And then in 2013, Schutten et al. In the BMJ published a systematic review and meta-analysis. It had over 12,000 patients and compared conventional D-dimer cutoff of 500 micrograms per liter versus an age-adjusted D-dimer cutoff.
Yeah, and their conclusion was that the application of age-adjusted cutoff D-dimer values substantially increases specificity without modifying the sensitivity, and thereby improving the clinical utility of D-dimer testing in patients who are age 50 or older who have a non-high clinical probability.
And there were some concerns about this meta-analysis expressed by some people, including Dr. Brent Toma from Boring EM. His concerns seem to focus on the heterogeneity of the studies and combining DVT studies with PE studies in their meta-analysis. Well, why don't you give us the clinical question then we're trying to address on today's podcast?
So this paper asks the question, can an age-adjusted D-dimer threshold safely exclude pulmonary embolism in non-high-risk emergency department patients who have suspected PE?
And what's the reference that we're going to use to try to answer that clinical question?
So this is the age-adjusted D-dimer cutoff level to rule out pulmonary embolism, the ADJUST PE study, which is found in JAMA 2014 and is published by Righini et al.
And what was the population they were looking at, Kirsten?
So this study was conducted in 19 different hospitals in 4 European countries. So that included France, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Switzerland. They recruited patients who were suspected of having pulmonary embolism in the emergency department. They defined suspected PE as acute onset or worsening of shortness of breath or chest pain without an obvious other etiology.
And their exclusion criteria included clinical suspicion for PE more than 24 hours after hospitalization, anticoagulation for another reason, creatinine clearance less than 30 mLs per minute, a contrast dye allergy, or life expectancy less than 3 months. So what was the intervention?
They looked at the age-adjusted D-dimer, which meant multiplying the age by 10 to use a new cutoff for patients who were older than 50 years.
And what did they compare it to?
They compared that to the standard cutoff for the assays that they used, which were all 500.
And what was their primary outcome?
The primary outcome was a failure rate for each diagnostic strategy computed as the number of adjudicated deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolism divided by the number of patients with a negative D-dimer result that were left without any anticoagulation.
The author's conclusions were, quote, compared with a fixed D-dimer cutoff of 500, the combination of pretest clinical probability assessment with age-adjusted D-dimer cutoff was associated with a larger number of patients in whom PE could be considered ruled out with a low likelihood of subsequent clinical venous thromboembolism. End of quote. Well, Kirsten, I'd like to go through the quality checklists for these types of studies, and there's 10 questions. The first question is, the clinical problem, was it well-defined?
Yes, I believe this question was well-defined. They were analyzing patients with suspected pulmonary embolism who presented to the emergency department, and this is something that we see almost every shift that we work in the emergency department. They based this question on previous retrospective data where they had developed their age-adjusted threshold, and they have really made an attempt to try and pull pulmonary embolism assessment in the elderly into the 21st century.
Question two, the study population, did it represent the target population that would normally be tested for this condition, i.e. no spectrum bias?
Yes, so certainly they recruited every patient they saw in the emergency department who they worked up for pulmonary embolism. However, their particular target population was actually the patients who were age over 50, who had a D-dimer that fell between the standard cutoff and the age-adjusted D-dimer cutoff, and who were non-high clinical probability. So from their large cohort of over 3,000 patients, they had a set of 337 patients who met those particular criteria.
Question three, the study populations included or focused on those seen in the emergency department?
Yes, so this was an emergency department run study, so this is absolutely relevant to us.
Question four, the study patients were recruited consecutively.
Yes, so there is a statement in the study that the emergency department recruited consecutive patients who were investigated for pulmonary embolism.
Question five, the diagnostic evaluation was sufficiently comprehensive and applied equally to all patients.
Traditionally, with diagnostic studies, all patients undergo exactly the same gold standard workup. So this was actually a management study rather than a traditional diagnostic study. The only patients who had a CT pulmonary angiogram were the patients who had a positive D-dimer as defined by their age-adjusted rule. So patients who had a negative D-dimer, the age-adjusted rule, simply had a three-month follow-up and were not treated with anticoagulation. This is acceptable because it would really be ethically impossible to run a study which had approval to perform a CT pulmonary angiogram on every single patient who presents to the emergency department with possible PE. I think added to that, it would be very difficult to recruit patients to such a study even if you had ethics approval. On top of that, we have to consider the costs of the study, and I think really to have a study over 3,000 patients where you're going to be performing an additional CT on every patient, really the study would not be possible.
Question six, all diagnostic criteria were explicit, valid, and reproducible.
Yes, so they described all of the D-dimer assays that they used. They described their CT scans, and they also gave a good description of the three-month follow-up period. So really in this study, the gold standard is actually the three-month clinical follow-up. So even the patients who'd had a negative CT pulmonary angiogram underwent the 3-month follow-up, and they report the results of the 3-month follow-up separate from the CT scan results.
Question 7, the reference standard, was it appropriate?
Yes, I think really with regard to the previous answers, I think this is the most appropriate reference standard that they could apply. Ultimately, we're interested in clinically important pulmonary embolism. So you could argue if a patient had had pulmonary embolism, however, without treatment, they did well and they did not return back to the emergency department, then it's unlikely that that event was clinically important. So yes, I think the reference standard here was appropriate.
Question number 8. All undiagnosed patients underwent sufficiently long and comprehensive follow-up.
Generally, the research world has accepted a 3-month follow-up is appropriate to signify a missed diagnosis for pulmonary embolism.
All right, question 9. The likelihood ratios of the tests in question is presented or can be calculated from the information provided.
So in this case, no, we can't calculate likelihood ratios because not every patient underwent formal testing for pulmonary embolism with diagnostic imaging. Instead, they report the false negative rate.
And the final question, Kirsten, question number 10, the precision of the measure of diagnostic performance is satisfactory.
The precision of the study is satisfactory. They did perform a power calculation prior to starting the study, and they calculated that they needed 250 patients in the group of patients with a D-dimer between 500 and the age-adjusted limit, who also had a non-high clinical probability. And they've achieved that satisfactorily.
Well, why don't we go through the key results then? There were over 3,000 patients with suspected pulmonary embolism included in the study, of which 337, or about 10%, were over the age of 50 with a normal age-adjusted D-dimer and a non-high clinical probability. The overall prevalence of PE was 19%.
2,898 patients were risk stratified as non-high risk or unlikely clinical probability. Of those, 1,154, or 39.8%, had a negative D-dimer when they used the age-adjusted cutoff. 817 patients, or 28.2%, had a negative D-dimer according to the traditional 500 cutoff level. So there's actually an 11.6% difference in the proportion of patients who could have pulmonary embolism excluded based on the age-adjusted D-dimer compared to the standard 500 cutoff.
And the 3-month thromboembolic risk for patients less than 500 using that less than 500 cutoff was 1 out of 810, or 0.1%.
The 3-month thromboembolic risk for patients with a D-dimer between the 500 traditional cutoff and the age-adjusted cutoff was 1 out of 331, which is 0.3%. The upper 95% confidence interval for that is 1.7%.
None of the elderly patients defined as age greater than 75 with non-elevated age-adjusted D-dimers had confirmed VTE during follow-up, or 0 out of 195, or 0%. And that 95% confidence interval went from 0 up to 1.9%. But Kirsten, we need to start talking a little nerdy. We've just finished all the results, but now we need to start interpreting them. And so the first thing I want to say is that geriatric patients are assessed for possible PE worldwide every day. However, US and Canadian studies consistently report PE rates lower than European studies. Therefore, the European data likely represents some form of spectrum bias skewed towards a sicker population relative to the US or Canada. And that skews estimates of sensitivity upward, but does not affect the specificity.
Pulmonary embolism was a prime target in emergency medicine to quickly and safely reduce CT scans. And this prospective outcome-based research provides strong evidence for what to do with older adults. Their 3-month adjudicated outcomes provide compelling proof that age-adjusted D-dimer provides a rationale to use risk stratification plus appropriate D-dimer testing safely to reduce unnecessary extra PE testing, even in the elderly.
Now, they used a revised Geneva score, or the two-level Wells score, to risk stratify patients who they clinically suspected of having a PE. However, the authors do not explain who performed this risk stratification. Was it the research team or was it the clinician?
Based on risk stratification, patients with a high Wells score or a likely clinical probability proceeded to CT pulmonary angiogram. Those patients with a non-high clinical pretest probability had D-dimer testing instead.
Neither the CTPA method or interpreting radiologist experience was detailed in the manuscript. Failure to report their CT instruments or radiologic experience is technically a flaw, like a risk of bias, from a purist perspective. In addition, they used how many D-dimer testing? Not one, not two, not even 5, my favorite number. They used 6 different quantitative high-sensitivity D-dimer assays.
However, these flaws also increase the external validity and the pragmatic approach of this research, since each of us likely uses a different D-dimer assay depending on where we work. Furthermore, the results did not seem to vary based on the type of D-dimer assay.
Although only one of the 7 deaths had an autopsy to confirm whether PE caused death, the longitudinal 3-month follow-up using structured questionnaire provides that strong patient-centered evidence of effectiveness. In addition, 3-month follow-up is that standard in PE literature which you mentioned earlier, and it's at that outer range that we would consider within the realm of ED control.
So this was a management study. It was a pragmatic study. The authors did not use the formal diagnostic methodology, and therefore they don't report a sensitivity, specificity, or the likelihood ratios.
It would be nice if future diagnostic research could be done in this area to evaluate the sensitivity, specificity, likelihood ratios, and interval likelihood ratios for age-adjusted D-dimers, as well as implementation strategies to incorporate these new levels of abnormal into geriatric emergency care.
This prospective outcome-based research adds to expanding volume of retrospective investigations, indicating that age-adjusted D-dimer is ready for widespread use and ought to be incorporated into guidelines, textbooks, and routine bedside care in the emergency department.
Yeah, the use of the age-adjusted D-dimer safely increases the proportion of non-high-risk patients from that 28.2% to 39.8%, with a non-elevated D-dimer and no further workup is required. This represents an 11.6% increase in D-dimer diagnostic efficiency. So, Kirsten, what do you think of what we've just gone through, our conclusions, and compare that to the actual author's conclusions?
I think the author's conclusions are correct. I think that they have shown that this is a safe approach to take.
So can you give us a bottom line, a take-home message, something that we can do tomorrow? What is the bottom line to all of this age-adjusted D-dimer strategy?
Using an age-adjusted D-dimer cutoff in emergency department patients with suspected pulmonary embolism will increase the diagnostic yield of D-dimer testing in non-high pretest probability patients by possibly 12%.
Can you give us a case resolution now?
So for my case, which I described at the start, this lady did have a D-dimer. And actually, her D-dimer level was 748. So that allowed me, in conjunction with her low Wells score, to exclude pulmonary embolism as a cause for her symptoms. And we were also able to exclude other life-threatening causes. And she was actually very well. Her daughter took her home and we advised her to come back if she developed any new symptoms or worsening symptoms. And she did not return to the emergency department.
And can you give us a clinical application then of this data?
So this rule is ready for use. We should be willing to incorporate age-adjusted D-dimer into our medical education, into our protocols, and into our patient-shared decision-making instruments.
Well, here's what I'm going to do with the information when I'm talking at the bedside. I'm going to tell the patient that blood clots in the lung are called pulmonary embolisms, and they can be hard to diagnose sometime. We do have a blood test for people like in this case scenario who are not at high risk. We adjust the test based on your age, and if this test is below your age-adjusted level, you most likely do not have a blood clot in your lung, and no further testing is needed. If the test is above your age-adjusted level, we will need to do a CT scan to check for a potential blood clot. There have been a number of FOMED reviews of the ADJUST PE trial. This includes Boring EM, EM Ireland, EM Cases, and Rebel EM. Well, that sound reminds me that it's time for the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Jim Perano. He is a PGY2 emergency medicine pharmacy resident. He knew that metronidazole is often used to treat C. difficile infections, but it's actually not FDA approved for this indication. Kirsten, what's this week's Keener question?
Warfarin is often used to treat patients with venous thrombosis. Where does the name warfarin come from?
Ooh, a good question. All right. So if you know how warfarin got its name, send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. And now for our conference update. I'm going to be at the Emergency Medicine and Acute Care Conference in Hilton Head, May 13th to 16th. And then I'm heading west to Edmonton. We'll be lighting the way at the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians meeting, May 30th to June 3rd. And then there is SMAC. Yes, SMAC in Chicago, June 23rd to 26th. Well, Kirsten, thank you very much for being our thrombosis expert on the SGEM.
Thank you very much for asking me.
Well, where do you think this thrombosis research is heading?
This is an exciting time, particularly for the emergency department, because for once there's now a focus on how we diagnose pulmonary embolism in the emergency department. I think this will concentrate our efforts both in research and clinically on rationalizing ordering of CT pulmonary angiograms. We're all very well aware that CT scan is associated with radiation, cost, prolonged length of stays in the emergency department, and more and more there's evidence that CT scans actually overdiagnose pulmonary embolism. So I expect that we will see in the future not just age-adjusted D-dimer, but also emerging research looking at D-dimer adjusted according to clinical probability estimates and maybe some other bedside assessment for pulmonary embolism, all in the name of reducing radiation and CT exposure.
Or to summarize what you said, we should be choosing wisely.
Yes.
Regular listeners will know that I love accents. And you know, Kirsten, I detected a little Scottish accent there in you, lassie. So I was wondering, could you give us the SGEM tagline, but in your best Scottish accent?
Remember to be skeptical of anything that you learn, even if you heard it on Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Oh, that was lovely. Talk to everyone next week.
It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you have a negative D-dimer.